if you think we're on the run.
In this week's Dad's Army podcast, we catch up on all the latest Dad's Army news. There's been quite a lot since Tony and I discussed the current goings-on in the world of Dad's Army. It's also been quite a while since we talked about the huge volumes of feedback we've received. Well, we put that right in just a few minutes in this podcast. But first of all, I'd like to tell you about a new development to the Dad's Army podcast. We now have a blog. Well, what's a blog, I hear you ask? Well, those of you who aren't familiar with the term, a blog is an abbreviation of weblog, which is essentially a diary online, and you can publish your innermost thoughts, if you so wish, to all and sundry on the internet to read. I won't be doing that, I'm pleased to say, yeah, but I will be writing about Dad's Army news that we don't always have time to talk about on the podcast. I'll also be talking about small events that happen and any other relevant items of news that I think you, the listeners, may be interested in hearing or reading about. It also gives me an opportunity to put some photographs on the website, so I hope you take a look at it. You're more than welcome as readers to make comments about it. There's a small button on the webpage that says comments. You can click on that and write whatever you like. And the website address is www.dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com. And you can go along there, take a look at what I've written, and please do let me have your thoughts. There are already a couple of articles up there about someone who decided to pinch the seagull prop from the Dad's Army stage play when it was performing at the Hackney Empire. Take a look at what I've written. Obviously, I've included my opinion about these stories as well. It's one of the advantages of having a blog. I can just carry on writing. And please do let me know what you think.
Hi, James. How are you?
Good evening, Tony. Yes, I'm fine, thank you. How about you?
I thought you was ill.
I wasn't going to go into graphic detail. I'm not.
Technically, you're fine.
I'm fine for the purposes of this podcast.
Good. Very good. So we had the Frank Williams interview, and I'm sure everyone who listened to that would have enjoyed it.
It was fantastic. Do you know, it was really fun recording that interview with Frank as well, because not only did I get to meet, obviously, someone who I've known on the screen as the vicar for, as long as I can remember, but I got really into the conversation. He's an absolutely fantastic man, very, very interesting, and his stories were brilliant. And at the end of recording, and we spent just over an hour recording, at the end of that recording, he suggested that, you know, we get together again because there's so many things that he wasn't able to cover. So it was a brilliant interview. I hope you enjoyed it. And it was one of the highlights of me doing this podcast, Tony, I have to say, so far.
That is one thing I would have loved to have been part of. I would have really enjoyed that. So I'm sorry I missed that.
You're listening to the Dad's Army podcast with James and Tony.
We haven't discussed news for some podcasts now, Tony, and we've got a few areas that I think are ripe for discussion. First of all, I was hoping to say in this particular news item that the BBC have been showing Series 6 every Saturday night for, well, since the beginning of the year. And unfortunately, they stopped. They stopped after the first four episodes. But it did have a semi-regular spot from the beginning of January right through until the beginning of February.
Well, one of those episodes was We Know Our Onions then. My parents came down for the weekend and they said they'd watched that. And they were amazed that they don't ever remember seeing that episode before.
Oh, right. I think you get that a lot of times when you speak to people who have seen Dad's Army for, you know, over the years. There's always one or two, unless you're an avid fan or a complete nutcase about the show like we are, Tony, but there's always one or two that's probably slipped them by, and that was the one that they'd never seen before. What did they think of it?
They thought it was one of the best they'd seen.
Really?
Honestly, genuinely, that's what they said.
Well, we haven't reviewed that one yet, have we?
No.
Did you watch it when it was on BBC Two a couple of weeks ago?
No.
You did?
No. We were talking about the man from Porridge. What's his name?
Fulton Mackay.
Yes.
Fulton Mackay. Actually, I think the actor's name is Fulton Mackay. Oh, and the character's name in Porridge is Mackay.
I think that's the pronunciation. I think it's Fulton Mackay, but in real life and in character.
Ah, okay then. Fair enough. I haven't got that many fond memories of We Know Our Onions. I haven't seen it recently, but I do remember Godfrey made a gun cover out of settee cushions, I seem to remember, or settee coverings, and obviously it was quite inappropriate. That was the last episode from Series 6 that they did show, actually, Tony. They didn't continue with the run after that, unfortunately.
We're also talking about the stage play again. James, you and I went to see it. You've been to see it, I think, twice more since. And most importantly, you were at the first night of the relaunch when it was at the Hackney Empire, yeah?
Yes, I was indeed. I was in the fifth row from the front, which was great. It was actually a bit of a strange experience, Tony, I have to say, because I went with my friend James, who featured on the podcast some months ago now. And we spent most of the time looking at a person in the front row who, from the back of his head, looked very like Jimmy Perry. And we ended up missing an awful lot of what was actually on stage at the time, which was unfortunate, because we were trying to figure out whether or not it was indeed Jimmy Perry. And at the very end of the performance, after it had all finished, he turned around, it looked nothing like him. The play itself was very good. My enjoyment of the play grows each time I see it. And of course, this was the first show in which Timothy Kightley featured as Mannerin instead of Peter Martin. And I have to say, I think he was brilliant in every way. He wasn't Arthur Lowe, but he was as close as you were going to get without being Arthur Lowe, and his words were far more commanding and much more authentic, and he added something to the show, I think, because obviously Mannerin features heavily in all four episodes. He features heavily in all of Dad's Army's episodes, and his performance really did change the feel of the play for me.
Looking forward to seeing that, as I will be doing in 2-3 weeks' time.
He was good. They have made some other changes as well. Nothing hugely significant, but Pike's got an extra line in the first episode, Strike for Fraser. They've also dropped the scene on the underground station in The Loneliness of the Long Distance Walker.
Ah, the man dressed as a woman.
That still features. It's been dropped, but it's been replaced with a much shorter scene on a bench in a bus shelter, and you have Mannerin one side, Wilson the other, and Judy stuck in the middle. And Judy looks suspiciously masculine. That's because the actor is a guy. And it's just been replaced. So I don't know whether that was for timing reasons or whether they thought that was funnier. I'm not sure, but it was. It didn't take anything away from the production. And the stage play's opening night of the Hackney Empire has been reviewed in the London Light newspaper, and you can read that article by following the link on our website. Ever wanted to share your views on Dad's Army with like-minded fans? Ever laughed out loud whilst watching a classic episode of Heidi High and wanted to discuss that moment with followers of the programme? Ever wondered how Frank Williams got promotion from Vicar in Dad's Army to Bishop in Your Angry Lord? Well, now you can find the answer to this and many other questions. Log on to the Perry and Croft Forum at www.perryandcroft.co.uk. Follow the link to the forums and you'll be chatting away with many others all over the world who share a passion for Jimmy Perry's and David Croft's many successful programmes. Log on to perryandcroft.co.uk and you'll never look back. It's a happy birthday to Ian Lavender, who turned 62 on the 16th of February this year. So hope you had a great birthday, Ian, and many happy returns.
And we can also report that Jimmy Perry and Leslie Grant were interviewed by Richard and Judy on the 7th of February. You've obviously all heard of Jimmy Perry and Leslie Grantham. Rich and Judy are a couple of people who interview people on Channel 4, I think.
Richard Madeley and Judy Finnegan, I believe, is their full names for our overseas listeners. And I didn't see the interview, and I know you didn't catch it either, Tony. It was on daytime TV, so we were both working. But from what I understand, it wasn't an interview of any great substance, but it was planned to try and promote the reboot of the touring stage play. But I always like seeing Jimmy Perry, or hearing Jimmy Perry, if he did a radio interview. He's always good value, irrespective of who he's interviewed by. And Leslie Grantham obviously doing his bit to promote the stage play as well.
You're listening to the Dad's Army podcast with James and Tony.
We've received loads of feedback over the last month or so, the first of which is from John Hale. Thanks for sending your email, John. John says, thanks for dreaming up the idea of a Dad's Army podcast. Having moved to Canada a couple of years ago, I've had to leave my collection of Dad's Army DVDs and videos behind, sob sob, in New Zealand with my folks. I've had to resort to watching them on YouTube, he puts in brackets, and also getting into the radio shows. I am currently dropping hints to my girlfriend about the collector's box set for my birthday. A subtle mention of this on your podcast would be appreciated, and I will play it to her. I'm not quite certain whether this actually qualifies as subtle, John, but there you are. It's been mentioned for you now, and I hope it pays dividends. It might actually be a little bit too late. John sent us this on the 29th of January, and of course this podcast is going out considerably later than that, but you never know. I hope it still serves a purpose. Your podcast reminds me of all of the happy memories I've had from when I started watching as a young kid. Those arrows at the start used to scare me as a youngster, to the not-so-distant future when watching I could recite the scripts alongside the episode. Thanks for the informative discussions and background insights, e.g. an earlier mention of the podcast was that it was Walker who cried Crawler, not Fraser. And that was a very early podcast, I think, Tony.
I remember an argument we had about that.
Yeah, that's right, and I had to eat humble pie again. I'm not quite sure also what you mean, John, when you say informative discussions. If it was more like random ramblings, then I think I can understand, but I'm not entirely certain how informative Tony and I are. I think the informative discussions feature when we've got a real quality base of knowledge from the Appreciation Society guesting. So, but thank you for the compliment anyway. Lastly, John mentions perhaps some ideas for future podcasts could include a listener's vote for best episodes, which I'm glad to say that we've already launched, so please feel free to send emails in. That's to all of our listeners, nominating your favourite episodes, and there's prizes galore to be won there. Scene, character, extra, interviews with any of the remaining cast, especially Bill Pertwee and Ian Lavender, a look at the character development over the course of the series, e.g. Pike. We've already interviewed Frank Williams, as hopefully you would have heard by now. I very much like to interview Bill Pertwee and Ian Lavender. Obviously, it's extremely difficult trying to arrange these interviews, but it is fantastic when we do manage to sort it. Finally, as I am still catching up on all your podcasts, but I want to add that I also find Jones irritating and over the top, whilst Cheeseman was a waste of space. Keep up the great work, and thanks for your efforts, guys.
There's also an email from Ian Sherwood. He says, Dear James and Tony, I have just listened to the 19th of May edition of your Dad's Army podcast. Well done. I'm looking forward to listening to the other editions over the coming weeks. I look forward to contributing in the future. Kind regards, Ian. Well, Ian Sherwood, thank you very much for that. I understand that 19th of May, that was our first ever podcast, so there's a few more since then.
Yeah, lots and lots more since then. So I hope you stick with it, Ian, and thanks very much for your feedback. We've also heard from Dean Williams from Australia, who's entered our competition to nominate his favourite episode. And Dean has done fantastically because he sent us a couple of lines in an email. He said, my favourite episode is the Series 3 episode Branded. It's my favourite because it deals with the life of Godfrey, something rarely seen, which is very, very true. And the reason why Dean scores double points is because he's also sent us an MP3 of his thoughts about Branded, which will play out on the podcast. So thanks ever so much, Dean. We'll enter you into the competition, and it was a fantastic piece of feedback, so thanks very much indeed.
And we have an email from Paul Thurston. Thank you, Paul. You're one of our regular contributors. We appreciate that. Anyway, Paul says, hi again, James and Tony. I'd like to cast my vote for the favourite all-time episode. This is a really tough one. I love them all, but I am going to go completely out on a limb here and vote for Fallen Idol. For me, it really is one of the funnier episodes and has many qualities and elements drawn together from the series as a whole. The Cardinal Puff Puff drinking game is just so funny. I might have played it myself in my misspent youth. Some great characters also feature in this one: Jeffrey Lumsden as Captain Square, Robert Raglan as the Colonel, Michael Knowles as Captain Cuts, and Mr. Snuggly makes his one and only appearance. Interesting to see the more serious tone blended with humour in this one. The platoon's reaction to Captain Mannering's sudden change of character and aloofness is so well done. Yes, for me, this is the one that just creeps across the finishing post to win by a whisker. Cheers, Paul. Thank you very much indeed for that email, Paul. We much appreciate it.
What do you think of that episode? Do you like that one as well, Fallen Idol?
Fallen Idol, that is an episode which I love the first half and hate the second half.
There's a couple like that for me as well, I have to say. I mean, Fallen Idol, I think I would probably agree with you. So, obviously, you don't agree with Paul on the Puff Puff drinking game, because that's the second half.
No, I'm sort of counting that as being the first half. I do like the Cardinal Puff Puff.
So is it the bombing part at the end you're not keen on?
It's the practice. It's the bombing practice and hand grenade getting stuck in the lorry. It's all a bit... It's a bit far-fetched, that bit.
It is a little bit. I have to admit, though, it's got one of my favourite drunk moments in it, and Paul mentioned it in his email, but it's where Mannerin's trying to get back into the tent. And
damn revolving doors.
Damn revolving doors, that's the line. One of the best lines ever. I think it's extremely good. But thanks ever so much, Paul, for your feedback there. Our last email comes from Andy Cheese. Hi, James. I was listening to your podcast where you mentioned about old film stars talked about in Dad's Army. I think the most used name is that of Jack Buchanan, who Sergeant Wilson is supposed to look like. And I think there are a couple of mentions, aren't there, Tony, to Wilson's similarity to Jack Buchanan. I'm not entirely certain whether I see the comparison myself, but there's lots of other film stars mentioned, isn't there?
Eddie Cantor, there's loads.
Yeah.
They're brilliant. I mean, they're names that I've become quite familiar with, except I haven't got a clue what they look like or what they did.
Well, this is what television can do for you, and when I was growing up, I had very little interest in history, and the only history that I now know is his stories or historical events that featured in programmes that I liked at the time. For instance, Doctor Who. There's some very old historical stories there. Unfortunately, my version of historical events have aliens in them as well, but I think it's certainly true of Dad's Army, when it certainly informs an awful lot about the wartime, as we've spoken about on many occasions.
Can't remember if we've said this before, but I would love to do a search for some of these actors on the internet, find out what films they were on, and just let people know which films they acted in and when, so perhaps we can watch a couple of these films.
You're listening to the Dad's Army podcast with James and Tony.
In podcast 15, we began to speak about the special features on the Christmas Specials DVD that was released at the end of 2007. We spoke about the Christmas Night at the Stars sketches, and we're now going to continue that feature and we'll discuss the remaining special features. So, Tony, if we start off with a Coward review, what did you think of that?
I loved it. Very unusual, because we've got the three main Dad's Army characters, Mannering, Wilson and Jones, and the scenery all looks as if it was a normal Dad's Army episode, and they're dressed up in their normal gear, but the fact that they're singing and sort of dancing in a strange way makes it very different from what you'd expect. I wouldn't have thought I would have liked it, but actually loved it. Really good indeed.
I think I'd be the same, actually. If someone were to describe the nature of the scene before I'd seen it, I don't think I'd have been all that excited about it. But all three actors, I think, come across very well. And like you say, it's not quite dancing, is it? It's almost like movement.
That's
strange. It's movements to the music, and of course they have lots of props and so on that coincide with the words. I wonder who wrote that song. Do you have any ideas?
Noel Coward, no?
quite possibly, perhaps. I'm not sure. I think the Coward Review was a programme that was shown at the time, was it not?
I'm guessing that the song was written by Noel Coward, hence the name The Coward Review.
That might be a little bit too logical. I have a feeling that's not the case. But
if I'm wrong, I now sound like a complete... something or other.
What's on that paper? No, I
you have to say, now that you said that, you have to say what episode you're just referring to there.
Oh, goodness me, strike for Fraser, I think, isn't it? But, I think we've probably come across as quite entertaining, but very, very uninformative, so I do apologise if we've got that completely wrong, but I'm certain some individuals out there can put us correct on it. But the actual content of the sketch, I think, is excellent as well. I mean, all three actors sing very well, and I think even... Well, it's strange.
There was a weaker singer out of the three, wasn't there? There was one that isn't quite as good as the other two.
You thinking of John Lemessurier?
Yes.
Yeah. He kind of talks his way through it musically. if that's the right way of putting it. And there's another scene on a different feature where John Lemessurier sings as well. And I'm not convinced. I mean, I've heard people say that John Lemessurier was a fantastic singer, but yeah, this didn't really demonstrate his talents.
He's not a singer, and I think. It's obviously an excellent part in it, and you don't need to be a great singer to do that little sketch well. He's done it brilliantly, sure. But he's not a singer, and I think he's certainly carried by by Mannering and Jones.
Yeah, no, it was quite an enjoyable sketch, and it's quite a comic song as well. I think the lyrics are very good. Moving on to the Blue Peter sketches, of which there were two, one of which had an introduction from Jimmy Perry.
This is Jimmy Perry talking about the Blue Peter art competition, where they're not Mannering. Arthur Lowe and John Lemessurier aren't happy with the script that they've written. For anyone who hasn't heard it, Mannering and Wilson are unhappy with the script that's been written for them for this Blue Peter sketch, and they get Jimmy Perry down.
I think the actors do, rather than Mannering and Wilson.
The actors do. And they get Jimmy Perry down to the studio, and Jimmy Perry says, well, you write it. And I think they never said, but I think they probably stuck with the original script.
Yeah, that was my impression as well. I mean, Jimmy Perry, it's obviously a reasonably recent edition. I don't know when they recorded it, but he's obviously got a good memory of what happened there. I think the sketches are actually quite good, especially given that, you know, they potentially, for a different audience, I know Dad's Army appeals to young children, but Blue Peter is aimed exclusively at young children, and I just thought they carried it off very, very well. I really enjoyed both sketches. I mean, one was centred around Mrs. Mannering as well, or the collage. There's a number of
jokes. You just nicked my comment, because that was the only comment I really had from that. Right. You actually see her. You see Mrs. Mannering. It is the only time you see her ever, isn't it?
Yes. No, I think it was very good. The van sketch, which I don't know if that's the right way of referring to it, but the sketch whereby Arthur Lowe drives Jones's van into the studio, I think is also good, because it's quite clear that it's not scripted, and yet Arthur Lowe still goes to pains to try and stay in character, and that I thought he did very well.
Yes.
Moving on to the stage show. Now, there's two clips included on the disc of the original 1975-1976 stage show, and it's clear, I think, that the audience is non-existent, and because it's an empty theatre, and the laughter that you hear is dubbed on. But there's a couple of things here that I think are reasonably interesting. First of all, you get to see an excerpt from A Stripe for Fraser, and there were a couple of changes from the original script. I think some have been necessitated by the actors who were available for the stage show. Fraser's not in this, which is ironic, given the original episode was called Stripe for Fraser. And John Barden plays Walker instead of James Beck. But I think that clip works quite well. It's good to see A Stripe for Fraser in colour.
John Barden is the... We've spoken about him before. He's the man in EastEnders, isn't he?
He plays Branning, Jim Branning in EastEnders. He was also a character in his own right in Ring Them Bells. He was the casting... is that the casting director?
Film crew, yeah.
He had something to do with the film crew. I can't remember exactly the name of the character. But his association with the stage play didn't end... with Dad's Army didn't end with Ring Them Bells. Mm. The second part is Frank Williams' cinefilm.
I thought that was pretty good. And that will appeal to anyone, I think, whether they're a friend of Dad's Army or not. If you're interested in old cinefilms, then you'll love this. It doesn't actually have a lot to do with Dad's Army in it, I don't think. So it's Frank Williams, and they're going around Blackpool, Hadrian's Wall, Bath and Longleat. And it's just a lovely little video of what the cast get up to when they're not in the stage show. I just thought it was excellent. I have just read Frank Williams' book, and there's a lot of similarities between the book and the cine film. I know you've read the book. Do you agree with that?
I think there's a couple of references to stories or anecdotes, if you like, that span both the cine film and also the autobiography. It depends what you're referring to explicitly, because obviously with a cine film at that time there was no sound, and the narration you hear was recorded only a few years ago.
Yes.
So there, you know, do you mean that the narration echoed some of the stories in the book? Or
I'm thinking of things like Frank Williams, where he says he's not very good with anything sort of technological. I'm struggling to remember some of them offhand, but it's quite, so having just read his book, which I thoroughly enjoyed, to see the cine video on this DVD brought it back to the book that I'd just read. Edward Sinclair was in this cine film quite a bit. To me, it showed the great friendship between Edward Sinclair, Frank Williams and Bill Pertwee, and it sort of was centred on those three, and you now sort of realise what good friends they were.
Yes, they did seem to be good friends on and off screen.
Something else that struck me, obviously Edward Sinclair died perhaps a year after, just 1 year after that cine film was filmed.
77, I seem to remember. Yeah. Moving on to the road safety films, which are obviously only two very brief clips here, which I liked. I think they're quite good. He says at the outset that the crossing itself is actually a fake one and was erected purely for filming purposes.
Why did they do that?
I don't know. I mean, you'd have thought there's plenty of Pelican crossings around that they could have used, I
guess. That's what I was thinking.
they weren't in short supply. The two things that I noticed here were the individuals who are actually giving the instruction. Wilson, of course, in one, was telling Mannering how to cross the road, and in the second one, you've got the verger correcting Hodges. I think that's good. A good use of the characters' strong points. Obviously, Wilson, even though he's not the most forthright, he's generally correct in anything that he says. And the verger, I suppose, is slightly out of character because normally what he says, he just agrees with the others rather than actually tells them what is correct. But even so, I still thought all the characters there kept in character, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
I thought what you said at the start about why on earth did they build a Pelican crossing, when you see the scene, you think there's a lot of effort's gone into that. And the only thing I could think of was perhaps they couldn't close a busy road. I guess the busy roads had the Pelican crossings on, and perhaps they couldn't get permission to close a road. Also on the DVD is the commentary by Jimmy Perry on the episode Battle of the Giants, where you can watch the episode and the sound is quieter than usual, and you've got Jimmy Perry talking about some of the scenes that are going on.
You've also got David Croft on there as well.
This is the only episode where we've got a commentary from the directors, David and Jimmy, and it's good.
They found some additional material as well that they've inserted into the episode Battle of the Giants, and they commentate on that, and that's the scene with the sheep in it. I just think it works. The whole thing works. The extra scene, I think, is great, and the commentary where they commentate through it is good. They seem a little bit detached sometimes, Jimmy and David, and at one point I wondered whether they were actually giving individual commentaries on their own and somebody had pasted them together, but from what I understand, they were actually recording together.
Now that you mention the sheep, I immediately remember the sheep.
The final two features to mention on the disc is, there's two main features. There's the photo gallery, which most of the Dad's Army DVDs do actually have, and sometimes, I tend not to look at these too closely, but I have on this particular disc, and there's a number of pictures that I think are obviously stock BBC footage and are fairly standard for discs like this. But there are also some additional photographs that are far more candid, and they show the filming. So I suspect those are the photographs that Rafe Montague mentioned that were donated by the Dad's Army Appreciation Society. So this photo gallery is really, really well worth taking a look, because it's got a complete blend and mix of photographs on it. In addition to the photo gallery, we have the Radio Times PDF document, which again is an excellent addition. It's 10 pages from various Radio Times that have featured throughout the years. I think it's got the very first original TV Times listing when Dad's Army first played in 1968. It's also got a few other features that have been in the Radio Times in subsequent years, and is an excellent addition to the disc. And finally, Tony, the Easter egg. Did you find the Easter egg?
No, I don't even know how to access it. can I do it now? Can you tell me how to? I've got the DVD on in front of me. Tell me what to do.
Well, for you and others who haven't found it yet, it's a hidden feature on the menu where you select one of the Christmas Night of the Stars shows to watch.
Okay.
Just under the first option, just under the first option for the Christmas Night of the Stars sketch, if you roll your cursor or move your DVD control panel down one, then it highlights an arrow, and if you click on that, then you get to see the special feature. And what it is, it's a small little piece on how they filmed Jones on top of the water tower in Battle of the Giants, and used a technique called colour separation overlay to make it look like he was at the top of the tower, which is quite an interesting little feature. They've got some words going across the bottom at the same time, just to let you know what was going on. So that was a nice little addition that I only found after checking on a couple of forums to find out whereabouts this alleged Easter egg.
Well, I've listened to what you've said, and I've got Christmas Night with the Stars highlighted in yellow, and you said go down from there, yeah?
Yeah.
I go down, and then get to
And I was helping Tony navigate his way through the DVD menus, trying to find that elusive Easter egg for about 30 minutes or so. Anyway, as I mentioned earlier, we're now going to play out with some audio feedback we've received from Dean Williams about Branded. Unfortunately, Tony and my discussion about Branded will now feature on podcast 17, and that's due primarily to timing reasons, I'm afraid. However, I hope you enjoy what Dean has to say. If you would like to record some comments about an episode, then please do save your comments into an MP3 file and send them through to us at our email address, which is warmingtononc333@yahoo.co.uk. We're going to be taking a little break, just an extra week, so we'll be back in 3 weeks' time when we'll be talking about Branded. In the meantime, don't forget to check out our blog at dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com, and we look forward to speaking to you very soon. Over to Dean.
First of all, I'd just like to thank you two gentlemen for agreeing to review this episode, as I believe you're reviewing it because I suggested it quite a while ago. It's my personal favourite episode. The episode I'm referring to is, of course, Branded, the 11th episode of Series 3 of Dad's Army, that I believe was screened sometime in November of 1969. Now, the episode starts, of course, with the scene when Wilson taking the parade and teaching him through the various aspects of stalking. I personally think this bit's hilarious because it involves all the members of the platoon, but it doesn't have the incredibly over-the-top, rather ridiculous humour of The Day the Balloon Went Up or Time on My Hands, with incredibly unrealistic and just over-the-top scenarios. In particular, I think the scene when Mannering creeps up on Wilson and Wilson shoots him is hilarious. Although, if you notice, there is a small continuity error in this scene, because when Wilson shoots Mannering, he's wearing a blindfold, yet when we cut back to Wilson 3 seconds later, he's already taken the blindfold off. Surely there wasn't enough time for him to take it off. Then after this scene, the action continues, which we discover that Godfrey has sent Mannering a letter informing him that he doesn't want to be in the platoon anymore. Then Godfrey proceeds to tell us a story about the field mice that he found in his pantry. I really like this because it's not silly, and it's very serious, but it deals with Godfrey's character, and he's often rather ignored, and, you know, you learn a bit more about him, and I just really, really like it. After that little scene or cameo, then we have the scene where Mannering's addressing the whole platoon in the parade. And for once, you see Hodges actually get one over Mannering. I just think that's hilarious with him getting up in the box and Mannering gesturing towards him. I'm sure, as you can tell from our reviews, I don't really think there's a low point in this episode. Then we have another scene in a location that I don't think we ever see again. Some sort of hut. And we see Jones, number one section, returning from patrol. Then, I think this scene is my personal favourite because it's not funny at all. It's really serious and you see how the whole platoon has sort of made Godfrey an outcast and no one likes him. And you really do feel sorry for Godfrey, who, you know, it's not really his fault he can't bring himself to kill someone. And, yeah, you just feel really sorry for him. The next scene is the scene where the platoon go to the place where Warden Hodges is holding the exercise in the smoke-filled hut. And once again, you see the typical Captain Mannering being rather pompous, you know, going, "Ooh, my platoon can do this, my platoon can do that." I think what's rather unusual is the fact that Hodges is absolutely correct, and that, you know, Mannering did put far, far too many rags onto the fire, and, you know, Hodges had the right amount on. Then we have the scene where Mannering falls unstuck due to his own flaw of putting on too many rags, and we see Godfrey rescue him. I think this is rather interesting, as from the frailty of Godfrey, I find it surprising he'd be able to rescue Mannering in the hut, but I suppose that's not the point. The final scene is also another one of my favourite bits in the scene. It's where Mannering is forced to swallow his pride
and apologize to Godfrey, because it turns out that Godfrey is actually a decorated hero, and in fact, much more brave and important a soldier than Mannering Arthur was, which I thought was rather ironic. But and then, of course, all the well as ends well as Godfrey is turned back into the platoon as the medical officer.
So, overall, from my personal opinion, I can't really see any low light with the episode. It's hilarious, and it's very serious, and it's hilarious, but it doesn't have to reduce to silly, stupid things. It's hilarious in just situation comedy, which I really enjoy. So, all in all, I think I'm going to rate this episode 4.5 out of 5, because it's just a brilliant piece of work. Oh, and before I go, I think I'd ask one of the trivia questions that you guys are so famous for. Can either of you name Godfrey's third sister? No? Well, she's actually called Madie, spelled M-A-D-I-E. She's mentioned in the book Dad's Army, The Defense of a Frontline English Village, which is several fictional diary entries from Mannering's fictional diary. It's a pretty good read. Thanks, and bye.
Also on the DVD is the commentary by Jimmy Perry on the episode Battle of the Giants, where you can watch the episode and the sound is quieter than usual, and you've got Jimmy Perry talking about some of the scenes that are going on.
You've also got David Croft on there as well.
Oh no, I listened to this like 2 weeks ago and I've forgotten. Yes, they come out of left and right of speakers, don't they? Yes. Yes, you're quite right. I've forgotten. Yes. Can I do that again?
No.